Good afternoon. It's 3:03 p.m., November 20th, 2018. This is an informal hearing on case number PU-18-345, Dakota Natural Gas LLC's tariff filing. I'm Randy Christman, Chairman of the Commission, joined by Commissioners Brian Krasius and Julie Fedorchak. I don't have any opening comments. Do either of you?
I do not.
Okay. So we will go around the room and have everyone introduce themselves on the microphone for the record. I will just say, being an informal hearing, we will only be dealing with evidence that is undisputed. If we get into disputed evidence, we will have to cease the informal and schedule a formal hearing. So if we can just go around the room and have everyone... get on the record, please.
John Shute with the Public Service Commission.
Victor Shook with staff.
Patrick Fahn with staff.
Adam Reffin, staff.
Jerry Leon with staff.
I'm Gregory Palmer. I'm president of Dakota Natural Gas. And while she's not in the room, on the phone is Christine Anderson, our regulatory. She's an attorney, but she's represented as regulatory affairs on this hearing.
Okay, thank you. Good afternoon, Christine.
This is Christine Anderson. I would just make sure to clarify for the record that while I am the corporate attorney, I'm licensed only in Minnesota, but I'm an employee of the company, which is why I appear here for regulatory affairs.
Very good. Thank you. If you want to just kick it off and... the company typically goes first in informal hearings, so go ahead and proceed with whatever information you'd like to tell us.
Commissioners, I'm here on behalf of Dakota Natural Gas. We are seeking to provide natural gas service to Drayton, North Dakota. It's a community that has wanted natural gas for a long time. I can tell you 20 years ago I looked at running natural gas to Drayton. And so the city has granted us a franchise. The main anchor for the making it financially feasible is American Crystal Sugar. They were at the last hearing, and I think they publicly said they're trying to decide whether to make an excess of a $30 million investment in the plant up there that would expand their ability to process sugar beets in the northern part of the Red River Valley. Both in North Dakota, but also Minnesota would benefit from that. One of the key things that they need to do to take it to their board and their members is to have clarity on all the permits. So we have filed a proposed tariff. If you grant us approval, we would provide that a copy of that to the Federal Energy Regulatory Commission. We've asked for a Henshaw exemption. In essence, be regulated by the North Dakota Commission. We would have a statement of operating conditions, but basically it says we'll provide service under the terms and provisions approved by the North Dakota Commission over time. We believe that if we are allowed to provide gas service, the rates would be very comparable to what our Minnesota companies provide service for. And right now our customers are seeing between a 30 and a 40% energy cost savings. So if you look at the city of Drayton, 200 customers, that's $100,000 a year in the community that would otherwise be spent on energy and go out of the community. So it's a benefit. The city of Drayton just this fall lost a seed company to another community because they didn't have natural gas, and that's part of the reason we had support from the city, and the city council has granted us a franchise to provide service if we get all the regulatory approvals. And American Crystal Sugar is wanting to, they have to make some major commitments. There's a long lead time on it. And so they are asking for clarity so they can make their financial commitments. If we would receive your approval and all the other necessary permits and regulatory approval, service would start in 2020.
Can you repeat you said a seed company
the seed company that chose not to locate in proximity or in Drayton?
There is a seed company in Drayton, and they established a new facility in another community because Drayton did not have natural gas, was the reason they gave the council.
Was it this past year or last several years?
They made the decision this last year. I'm not sure if the new facility is up and running or not.
Okay, but very recent at that.
Yes.
Did you have anything else to add at this point?
No, Commissioner.
Mr. Chairman, I just would like to just make sure that this is clear, that there's a lot of information that's been provided to the staff as well as the commission. Some of it is trade secret, and so if any of this information does fall under that category of information, we can take appropriate measures to have that discussion, but just let us know ahead of time so that we can stop the recording and continue like we normally would. The other thing is I spoke with Ms. Anderson regarding a number of documents I provided to, I believe, everyone in the room, maybe not Adam and Jerry. Those are the data requests and responses from the company that we'll be asking to put those in the record. As well as, Ms. Anderson, did you receive the documents I just emailed to you?
Yes, I did receive those, and we have no objection to those being introduced.
Okay, there's the three documents regarding rate design that Mr. Shook brought in here, and I did provide them to the company, and those will also be, we also requested those be placed in the record as well.
Okay, does someone want to go through these and explain generally what we're looking at, or provide any additional thoughts?
Sure. So this is Victor with staff. So at this point, we are advisory staff. We do not have an advocacy position in this case at this time. I will say the company has been very good to work with thus far. We've made a number of suggested changes to them in the tariff language. They've been very gracious in making those changes without much more than some discussion to support the reasoning for it. So that's very helpful in what we do. So the data requests that Jack has provided. So we had a number of kind of questions that we didn't feel were answered with just the normal filing paperwork. So we filed a number of different questions. And the first one is simply just the data in spreadsheet format, which just kind of helps me in my review and moving numbers around to make sure everything it checks out. The next one in finding
I'll
out.
Ask.
Yeah.
Excuse me. The question on that, because this is a new participant in our regulated world here, is the information that was requested, that they requested trade secret protection for, kind of consistent with the kinds of things that the utilities we're used to dealing with have made those requests for? Or are they requesting trade secret protection for way more things than we're used to, and so we're unable to provide a good public record here, or what?
No, the trade secret is on par with what we've seen with other utilities to date. So nothing out of the ordinary or trying to protect more than what I think they rightly should.
Okay, very good. Thank you.
You're welcome. So question number two, I just wanted to kind of get a feel for how other cities that they have served, you know, so they haven't served anything in North Dakota, but they have served other similarly sized communities in Minnesota in the recent past. So just trying to get a feel for what the adoption percentages are in the first couple of years to see if, you know, what their assumptions are. You know, all of this really comes down to assumptions. Since there is no system, you know, every other utility we regulate has been in place for quite some time, so we have firm, hard data we can refer back to, and this is really just assumptions. So we're trying to verify those as best we can. So essentially, I looked at, you know, what the population size was along with, you know, what the year one and two customer count was, kind of a wide variety of you know, what percentage of adoption there is. I mean, anything from a low of about 20% to a high of 40%. I believe Drayton, their assumption is that they're going to get about 200 customers. That's about 26%. So it's above the bottom, but I think it seems like a reasonable place to start.
And I would just clarify that's based on population, correct?
Correct. That's just population to services.
And it would be about 75% of the households in the town.
Well, okay, so I was trying to figure that out and looking at households of these various communities, and it looked to me like about half or not quite of households were taking service.
Just to clarify, I believe this is just the first 2 years, on the first 2 years that are in the information they provided, so not the extended 5 to 10 years, or 8 years, I think, is the oldest one they provided to us. Is that correct?
Commissioner, yes, that is correct. When you count households in a community, and, you know, just the way I do it, I go on Wikipedia and see how many households there are. One thing you have to be cognizant of is a household could be an apartment, and there could be 10 households in one building or 10 apartments. And then the second thing that affects it is the electrical. When I say there's 240 households, I'm talking about houses that can take natural gas. I didn't account the apartment bill. I've got those in the commercial accounts, but on the households, I'm talking about houses that would be taking natural gas, so it doesn't quite line up with the population, and that could be confusing.
Yep. And that would explain why the percentage is kind of varied when you look at that. And it, I agree, that's a much better, more accurate way to look at it.
Along those lines, the project doesn't work without the large commercial customer, American Crystal Sugar, correct?
Commissioner, that is correct.
So, and I jumped ahead to question number 6, but I think it ties in terms of, I think it's important to look at the residential rate of adoption as a part of this, but the vast majority of the natural gas will be delivered to the commercial customer. Is that correct?
Commissioner, that is correct.
And is that tied proportionately to the 26% of DNG's asset investment for the project, which is strictly to serve the Drayton area community?
Commissioner, the 26% is the capital the company will own for the plastic system and the services that serve the residential and commercial customers other than American Crystal Sugar.
With the remaining 74% projected to American Crystal Sugar.
Commissioner, that's correct. I just want to make sure that everyone understands there's benefits. So the residential and commercial customers in Drayton are paying for 26% of the town border station. American Crystal Sugar's rates would recover 76% of that.
Right.
The American Crystal Sugar rates recover 100% of the cost of the steel line, including the fact that the town gets to use that, quote, for free. And then the town rates recover the cost of the plastic system. There is a benefit to American Crystal Sugar in that you spread the operating cost over a larger base with the town. Mm-hmm. So everybody is benefiting.
Yeah, I guess what I just want to make sure it's not inaccurate and that there's a degree of wiggle room if the rate of adoption falls short and it's not at 70% and it's at 50%. Proportionately, you're talking about it's not going to change the numbers drastically.
Commissioner, you're correct.
Okay.
And we would agree with that assessment.
I hate to use the word wiggle room, so to speak, but because it's not terribly technical, but there's some give, if you will.
And I would say the company is more so taking on that risk rather than the ratepayer. If the adoption rate is less than they are anticipating, they run that risk of under-earning further. And we'll get into that, but under-earning further than they already plan to in the initial years.
So just a little bit more on that. Can you make the project work without residential customers?
Commissioner, the agreement with American Crystal Sugar covers the debt service, even if our saturations in the town are well below our projections.
Okay.
So we can service the debt. We won't have a return on equity or income tax, but we can service the debt. We could have done the project without the town, but our normal practice is we get an anchor customer like that, and we serve a number of communities on this basis, and then we provide service to as many folks around there as we can.
And do you build out as you get the customers, or do you build out that plastic system sort of like a certain amount of it right away?
Commissioner, in this case, we would build out the plastic system the first year. That's the lowest cost way.
Okay.
And recognize it's going to take usually within 3 years. The first year, you can have a range of how many people will sign up, but then the second year, they talk about their energy savings and the convenience.
Mm-hmm.
And by the third year to the fifth year, we hit 85%.
Yeah. And a little bit more on the adoption rate. I think we talked about this in our first meeting, but if you can remind me, have you done some of the research to determine how many of those customers have the type of heating system that's relatively easy to switch over to this versus the more complicated, like I forget what it is, it's the hardest and most expensive if it's switching from the propane or if it's the electric, but to adopt the natural gas system. Do you have that kind of insight into your customers?
Commissioner, I don't. I think we looked at the number of propane tanks. That's your easiest system to convert. But the fact of the matter is that the residential difference in saturation is not going to materially affect the financials. The commercial customers are carrying the project and the residential benefit from that. And then our long-term success is going to be to use this as a stepping stone to add additional communities in the future that would be serviced out of the same labor force.
And then you must have some other commercial customers, maybe not big, huge ones, but some other commercial customers in the area that you could service.
Commissioner, the second largest commercial customer is the grain terminal, and they use it for drying. So a year like this year, we have very high grain load on our system. Some years you have nothing. Then the second largest commercial customer is the school, which we have not talked to the school. And then you have a multitude of, like, city properties. We did talk to the Economic Development Task Force, who said it would help their businesses, but it's smaller businesses,
sure,
and churches and things like that.
Okay.
So the school hasn't reached out either in terms of inquiring?
Commissioner, I did try and reach out to the school. I didn't connect with them, so I still have to have that discussion. But this is a normal risk that we take with this kind of structure when we go into a community of this size and we have an anchor customer. Then we try and serve,
sure,
as many people around that as we can.
Yeah.
Okay.
Okay.
Are there any of these other questions you wanted to highlight? I don't think we need to go through the communities one by one. But.
No, we certainly don't. I'm just kind of skimming through my questions. I will note the depreciation period here that's being planned is 30 years. We had some discussion around the idea that, you know, useful life is likely to far exceed 30 years.
Right.
Essentially, the 30 years is to kind of protect the company a little bit to a certain degree in getting that asset paid down. So rather than have lower rates now and run the risk of not being able to pay this system off at some point in the future and therefore, you know, leave some number of customers left holding this bag of having to pay for it, kind of that shorter depreciation window.
What would happen if, along that line, I think the 30-year window, even though useful life far exceeds it, is prudent, given the fact that there are no guarantees. I mean, about the time you assume American Crystal Sugar will be in the Drayton, in proximity to Drayton, processing sugar beets, making sugar. It's a commodity, and who knows long-term what that commodity market will do. What would happen if the 15 years from now or 20 years, if American Crystal just moved it or ceased to use that particular facility, which I know doesn't seem likely given the investment they're making, but it's still the business world, and they're unpredictable.
Commissioner, that is one of the risks contemplated, and the way we deal with that is we amortize the debt over the 15 years of the contract. So the idea is at the end you'd have 100% equity. If let's just say that contract was extended, then we would look at maybe refinancing consistent with the new length of that contract. But our premise is we cannot have a lot of debt on the system that exceeds the life of this contract.
Okay.
Okay. Okay. So those are all of my questions that I had there that I wanted to highlight. Some other
What's normal on the time frame on other gas systems that we regulate?
Time frame for depreciation?
Yeah.
I want to say new plastic is in the range of 50 years.
But what about Bobcat? What was the depreciation on that one? That was kind of similar to this in terms of covering the cost of the build-out almost entirely.
Well, that rate was adjustable in that situation. So I think the cost to Bobcat, the Bobcat facility, reduced as more talents got on board. It was more so that what we had approved was the rate to Bobcat to recover the full cost of that extension and then the incremental cost as smaller customers are brought on board. That's what I'm kind of recalling. It's been a little while, but.
Okay. Wasn't there depreciation?
There was certainly a depreciation schedule.
I
can certainly find out and let you guys know if it's something you're interested in.
I'm okay with it the way it's. I don't need any more info, but maybe Randy.
20 years is in my head. I don't know if that's correct, but.
Not to clarify that issue specifically, but Mr. Shook and the staff also still have to file a memorandum relating to this case, which we'll do after the informal. And at that point in time, we can actually put that in the memo if that's what you prefer.
Sure. I don't think that's urgent. I just wanted it for clarification.
Sure. That's a good question. And that is a good point, Jack. I haven't completed my review in full. I've had a number of questions answered by the company. I still need to complete a fair bit of review on this, but I do intend to file a memo with the commission of a recommendation once that's complete. Any other questions for the moment?
I don't.
Okay. Some things that I think are noteworthy that just kind of differentiate this from other gas utilities we regulate. Obviously, it's a brand new small system, so things don't work exactly like we're used to. Not necessarily bad, just different. The debt structure, or I can't think of the right term off the top of my head right now, but basically the debt to equity is slightly different. What's that? Capital structure. That's what I was going for. So generally in a regulated utility, we see approximately 50% equity and the remaining in long and short-term debt. In this case, we're actually seeing a 45%, I believe, is the correct number of equity. The remainder is in long-term debt, which is a positive as far as customers are concerned. That helps reduce their costs over time since currently the interest rates are far lower than what the return on equity would be. So I think that's positive. I mean, it's not a huge jump. I mean, 50 to 45, but it does help, and it counts for something, certainly. So that is certainly positive. That's why this one isn't making sense. I have a bunch of refund paperwork in here from another case. Couldn't find the stuff.
Well, we're in a little lull here, Christine. I just want to check in and make sure you're still online.
I am still. I'm here. I just am on mute, so you don't hear me rustling papers and things like that.
Okay, that's fine. Just wanted to make sure in case we lost you for some reason.
Thank you for checking.
So along with the the capital structure difference, they're requesting return on equity of 10%. It's higher than what we've granted with other utilities, but it's also, again, this is a smaller system with, it kind of helps make it make sense, I think, in the long term, and I think this is what they've seen in other communities. So I'm not overly opposed to granting them a 10% return on equity. Part of that is we're used to rate of return regulation where we kind of see that whatever percent we're granting approximated every year. That's not what any party is expecting from this one. The company is fully expecting in the early years what, 1 through 5 or so, to under-earn drastically from that number for trade for the later years to over-earn. So in the early years, I don't know, do you have an estimate? I forgot.
Year one return on equity is about 4% with the correct tax rate. We had made a mistake in what we had filed, and then it ratcheted up. I think it's year 7 or 9, it switches to 10% equity, and then there's some over-earnings. But on a discounted net present value, it's 10% over the 15-year term, using all of the assumptions that are in there.
Okay. Which is, in my opinion, it's a very reasonable approach to kind of help get the new system up in place and allowing the company to earn that return over time in a reasonable fashion. If we kind of compare this, the closest size system we have is the Great Plains system in Wahpeton. That is roughly 10 times the size of this. And very small changes in that system can make big differences in, as far as earnings. We've seen that larger company swing by $100,000 swing will take it from under-earning, by a fact, so let's say getting down into the 3 and 4% earnings all the way up to, I think we've seen them at 30% our return on equity in certain years. So this is very reasonable, I guess, in my opinion, if that's the numbers we're going to be seeing.
Are American Crystal's usage expectations pretty consistent, or do they also do drying where they have wet years and dry years? Or
Commissioner, I've got to be careful what I share about their knowledge. They were here at the last hearing. I think they did say this was for a kiln investment, a lime kiln investment. So it's not a dryer, but there are assumptions on what they will use. And if those assumptions are off, it'll have a detrimental impact on the returns.
And how long, so you said, Victor, that there won't be like the annual review of the rate of return. Well, how long is there
an annual review? I mean, we can require them, and I would expect us to require them to file an annual report similar to other companies. It's just with these smaller systems, we should not expect rate cases like we see with gas, for example. We're not going to see a rate case every 3 years. It'll probably be closer to Great Plains Natural Gas, where we may not have a formal case for 20 years, or 30 years even. The company's been very willing to work with us on these things. So if we get to a position where the company is drastically over-earning, I have the feeling at least that they would be willing to more informally handle something like that rather than requiring a full-blown rate case, which would the cost of a loan cause under-earnings.
But we would still have the ability to require some sort of a discussion.
Absolutely.
Okay.
Absolutely. So that's a good point. Very good point. So I believe that's all of the kind of the more odd items per se that I'm seeing in
is odd situation. Another one of those technical terms Brian mentioned.
Like wiggle room.
We can call it innovative.
Yes.
So outside of that, the kind of the next thing to talk about is more of the rate design stuff in the Dakota Natural Gas refers to it as the monthly facility fee. We're more accustomed to call it a basic service charge or customer charge. It's all kind of the same thing. Our other gas utilities in the state are closer to the range of 19 to 20, and that's what those other pages that I've provided you. Find where I put those now. Here we go. So MDU, after the completion of the last gas rate case, will be at approximately $20.86 per month for a residential user. The next page would be Northern States Power, which is $18.48 per month. So I tried to really limit my comparison of Dakota Natural Gas to either of these utilities simply because it's a much smaller, much newer, and it changes the costs associated with it. But I felt there was just a few certain things that are relatable, at least, and that basic service charge is one of them.
Can we talk about the basic service charge and how you guys set yours at $8.50?
Thank you, Commissioner. We set it at the rate we've used in Minnesota. And I know it's not the same. I can tell you we were aware of the policy of the straight fixed variable rate design in North Dakota, and that is a preferential rate design from a utility perspective. It gives you the ability to have more certain earnings, less fluctuation on weather, you're not worried about standby service, and theoretically that translates to you can survive with a lower return on equity, so it benefits the ratepayer long term. So all those things are good. The problem we have is when we go into communities, and I think Drayton is very much aligned with this, people have not had natural gas. They've never had it.
Mm.
And so what they're used to doing is paying for their energy based on usage.
Sure.
And if you look, this is assuming 100 decatherms per year. If you look at the numbers for the communities we serve, nobody's gotten to three-quarters of that on a use-per-customer basis. So if you have substantially lower than 100 decatherms of use per year, that customer charge starts to be more and more onerous. Mm. And so our goal is to get as many people using the system and benefiting as we can, because that makes rates lower for everybody. And the way they're used to paying for their propane is if I use 1,000 gallons, I pay for each gallon I use. So they're more used to that. And so we've gone with more of a variable rate design than I think you have with other utilities. But when those utilities converted to that, customers had a long experience of using natural gas, and you weren't introducing it into this new market that people explain it. If you do go with a higher facility fee, I would ask the commission to consider, and you know, it's really what the commission wants, but if you go with a higher facility fee, I would ask the commission to standardize the rates for residential and small commercial. You cannot have a higher commercial fee for a church, for example, than you do for a residential. So in the sheet, the bottom line, we roll the classes together if that's the preference that the commission goes with a higher fixed.
We have quite a few sheets.
The last sheet that John had handed out, we said, and Victor asked us this question, he said the commission is thinking this is inconsistent with other utilities and people ought to be treated the same. We agree, but we proposed the top line, the Dakota Natural Gas option. We said if you went to straight fixed variable, your customer charge would go to $47. And I can tell you people in Drayton would not understand that. Mm-hmm. I just, because I've dealt with other places. Mm-hmm. If you go with a $20 customer charge, which is more consistent with the other utilities, you'll see that the residential distribution rate is lower than the commercial rate. And it confuses people, especially if they have a business and a home, why they would pay a difference. So if you do want to go with the $20 customer charge, we would ask you standardize the distribution charge for the commercial and residential customers, so at least there's a semblance of understanding. We still believe that to optimize the benefit for the people in Drayton, what the company proposed is the right way, and I know that's different.
I don't have a problem with it being different from how other customers are paying in other companies, because it's a completely different setup. So I think if you think that's the best way and you think the customers are going to like it the most, and you've got some logical reasons for that, that I can understand how you think that and you have experience as well, I'm supportive of this rate design.
I'd like to walk through this just a little bit, if I may. Listen.
Go ahead.
I'd like to go first, Commissioner. So I'm really glad they kind of put this together for us. It helps kind of lay out the entire gamut here. So as he said, in the top section for residential here, $850 as they proposed it, we have the $20 step, and I'm going to come back to that in a minute. But $46.83, that is really comparable to MDU and Excel's $20-$21 a month, something like that. If we were to force them to go all the way to where the other companies are, that's what they would have to make that basic service charge, which I agree, that's far too high. It's going to discourage a lot of adoption. I like the $20 step. I think it's a mid-range between what they've proposed and what the full straight fixed variable is. And it also kind of lines up where the other companies are. What my concern would be over the long term, if we adopt $850 now and we don't have a rate case for 20 years, $850 at that time is going to be as to like a $2 basic service charge now. We're having that issue with the Great Plains system, whereby moving to more in line with what other gas utilities charge, it's a huge step and a lot of rate shock for customers. So I'm not saying it's the only way. It's
rate shock just in terms of if it down the road moved from $850 to $20.
Well, what I'm saying is probably by the next time they actually show up for a full-blown rate case, it might have to be like $50 maybe is the new norm by that time, or $40, you know, some number larger just due to inflation.
And are you just worried that the customers for Great Plains or for MDU will say, well, this isn't, look at us, we're paying $30 and these guys are paying $8.50?
I don't know. In my opinion, I don't know that the majority of them are aware. I would say possibly Great Plains would be aware. They're closer. I don't know that they would. Most average customers are going to be generally aware what other natural gas customers, even of other utilities in the state, would pay. Some may be aware of
it. So then why do they all have to be the same?
They don't.
Or similar?
They don't have to be. And I think that's what I'm trying to say. We don't have to make it 20. We don't have to make it 40. To me, 20 feels like a little bit more happy medium than the lower end of the range at $850, where I would have more longer-term concerns of eventually if the company's plans to continue to expand their service in North Dakota, eventually they could be to the size or at least serving the number of customers that some of our other gas utilities serve in the state, where they could have much more widely adopted service and therefore, I guess, more favorable rates.
So 20 would be in line with other utilities?
20 would be, yes.
There is the potential of customers who are not used to a facility fee.
Yep.
Saying, wait a second.
Yep.
However, at the same time, I think these customers realize that propane in particular is significantly more than natural gas.
Yes, it is.
And that their major, I'm assuming, American Crystal Sugar is the largest employer in the Drayton area. It's very important to the local economy. This helps solidify their presence anytime that they can experience savings in their operation. I'm going to jump ahead a little bit on some questions I had that were probably going to be more at the end. But
can you wait, though, because I'm not done with this piece. So are you switching over from the basic rate service charge away from that? Oh, it's on that. Okay. as long as we're not leaving that topic.
No, this is still related. Well, sort of. It is, but how are you going to communicate to customers? Potential residential customers, you know, here's a rate schedule that for you to consider, and then with the intent, of course, to get them to switch over from propane or whatever heat source they have.
We have a process we follow. We start out with a community meeting, and we've already had some meetings with the City Council and the Economic Development Authority, but we have a local meeting for community. We also do door hanging and mailing. Any customer that signs up with natural gas has to have a technician go out and do a one-on-one visit to design the service. So we have printed material we share with them about that. It'll compare the cost of natural gas under whatever rate design is approved and alternative fuels, whether it be propane or oil or electricity. And so it's very much a one-on-one process to go through this. You have your community meeting where people ask questions. Then you have the individual meeting at their home. And what we tell people is that they need to work with a local heating contractor to understand exactly what it costs to convert all their appliances. And maybe it's easy to convert the furnace because most furnaces are natural gas furnaces, but you can't convert the water heater. And we don't want two fuels in the house. So what they need to do is meet with that heating contractor, know how much it costs to convert, and we will give them a quote and say, this is how much it'll cost to get the gas to your house. There's a fixed fee for putting something in by plow, but maybe if you have a golf course for a yard and you want us to directionally bore it, there's a higher fee. We'll give them those two quotes, and the customer makes a decision to sign up. Once they sign up, you know, we help them with the conversion. We call them and say, are you having issues? Do you have heating contractors that'll help you convert and all that?
So the customer is well educated, it sounds like, at that point in time in terms of what their total annual cost will be. And then they can make a personal financial decision on whether or not to convert. And so whether it's $850 or $20, they're
we'll deal the with net that. Number. This will not be the end of the world, what you decide. If you do decide on the $20 fee, I would ask you to standardize the residential and commercial so people for similar types of facilities, whether it be a house or a business, decide or can understand why they're paying about the same rate.
Is that it?
That's it.
Okay. I have more on this too, but go ahead.
Okay, you go ahead.
Well,
maybe you'll cover mine.
First of all, I just wanted to point out, I don't quite totally agree that the propane customers are used to only paying for their fuel, because they are either paying a monthly or annual fee for rental of a storage tank, or they've bought a storage tank, or they've got some experience at fixed costs as well. Although I've become convinced, and I don't regret the decision in other cases, to move toward that straight fixed variable rate, and it hasn't always been popular, but I think long term it was the correct thing to do. I also want to see things like this get started, and so as much as I would like to maintain complete consistency, I think $47 a month is going to make it kind of impossible. But to at least maintain some consistency toward the dollar amount, the basic service charge, I think helps bridge that gap. And so I tend to like that basic service charge being in that $18 to $20 range. I don't, and I'm going to have to leave here in a little bit, so I'm going to sum up a couple things. I don't have an objection towards standardizing that residential and commercial rate, although this is the first I've heard of it, so I haven't really contemplated it. And so I'm curious from staff whether you see a problem with that I'm not seeing.
I don't have a concern with standardizing between those two. I do have to spend some more time with analyzing the data, but okay. I don't see an issue.
And I will say, and you were forthright enough, as I understood it, to acknowledge that the straight fixed variable rate, you know, makes some sense long term. And what I, but then the difficulty in acquiring customers. And so what I worry about by going all the way down to like the $8.50 rate that was proposed is that it becomes almost a loss leader kind of a thing where, well, we throw out this real low price and then we get these people to make the decision and sign up. And if they're not fully understanding it, as you express concern that some of them may not, then when the company comes back in, as the other utilities have, and want to move toward a more accurate pricing system, either probably not all the way in a case of a small utility like this, but some of the way toward the fixed rate, then all of a sudden we have this shock. You know, well, gosh, it was 8.5, and now you're jumping it up. And so I think being somewhere in the middle of there, I think, is a better plan for this company and for those consumers.
I have a question. Do you have a do you anticipate having a small commercial and a general commercial class?
The in our assessment of the market, the only large firm commercial would likely be the school, and the only large interruptible would likely be the mill, and the rest of the customers we would put in what I would call a small commercial class, and if the decision is the $20 fee to put, treat them just like residential, it's like city buildings with the restaurant, and I mean it's not big companies, but we would have a larger commercial for like a school type of facility.
Okay, and so what would the basic service charge be for like the school and the
we proposed in our proposal that facility fee would be $100, and the problem is that the commodity rate is higher than the standardized rate, so you have your large customer paying a higher meter fee. If this is direction, we would probably go back and just roll all of our firm rates together and have one firm rate based on what's in the market. But the commercial class, as I'm thinking about, if you go into another town, we may not have anticipated what those large commercial are at this point. So I think for Drayton, you could standardize it. But then if you go into another town, let's just say you went into Pembina, that might not be a fitting rate design, and we would have to maybe propose a different rate for large commercial than we have. We would just file it at that time, I guess.
Just to follow up on Randy's concern about the loss leader, that's a legitimate point. Have you raised your rates in other communities, your basic service fee, and how long have you been in business there?
Commissioner, our last rate case was 2009, so we haven't raised it in 10 years. The company was in business in 1995, and 2009 was the first formal rate setting process they went through. In Minnesota, small companies are exempt, and it started out as an exempt company. Mm.
Okay, so I'm still struggling to fully understand why, from our perspective, we want to have everybody, or what the rationale is or need to have more similarity between the different gas utilities. We've gone that direction in the other ones because the companies asked for it, for starters. And then there was logical reasons, and it made sense, so we've gone that way. But if this company is saying this is a better path for us, and we're considerably different in terms of how their size and their whole business plan, I guess I'm trying to understand why we want to push them into the other format that works for much larger utilities if that's not what they're asking for.
I agree. I mean, that's a fair argument as well. Really, this is one of those rate philosophical questions that there is no wrong answer necessarily. There's better answers, and that's all we have to figure out is which is the best answer in this mm-hmm. case. In my opinion, in that $20 range is a balance, but $8.50 works as well. If the commission is set on that, I agree with what you're saying as well, that you know we don't have to keep all the companies the same. However, if the commission's real feel is that straight fixed variable is the correct rate design for North Dakota, then we should probably try to be consistent with that. I don't know that the commission necessarily has stated that in the past, but that has been the direction from staff in the past in rate cases.
Jerry, Pat, you guys, Adam, have thoughts? You should grab a mic.
I don't have it in front of me here, but I'm trying to recall what was your charge like for the residential on the charge per therm or per CC? 4 cents or 40 cents?
46 cents.
Okay, so.
That's distribution delivery charge, Jerry. That's not the energy charge.
So that would be, if you're talking about basically a decatherm, it would be $4.60. So $40 a month for a typical customer?
Yes.
Okay. I'm just trying to get a handle on, so if you raise the monthly charge, you're still going to have to run about half of that distribution delivery charge?
Yes.
Okay, that's all I needed.
That is a good point, Jared. It's another factor I've been meaning to point out as well is the difference. So our other utilities generally bill in decatherms. The company is proposing CCFs, which is roughly one-tenth of a decatherm. And it's the reasoning is, you know, similar to their lower basic service charges that customers are used to propane. A CCF is far closer to propane than a decatherm. So in the, you know, if we were only after the true idea of standardization, I think we would force a decatherm billing only. I think what the company's proposed makes sense. It's a, it's not an arbitrary number they're making up. CCF is a real thing that has requirements for pressures and things like that. So I'm okay with billing by a CCF, but it is a very good distinction. When we look at these numbers, it's important to note how many of these are going to be billed. You know, so that 46 cents per CCF is going to add up in the wintertime.
Mm-hmm. And would add up to less if you had a higher basic service charge.
Yes, it would. So, in this, that again, this sheet kind of shows how that works. So, in that top residential, in the 1,000 CCFs.
Are you on this sheet, Steph?
Yes, ma'am.
Okay.
So, right here in the total annual costs, all three of those are exactly the same number, $562 per year. What we're talking about is where you split that out between mm-hmm. basic service charge and this distribution delivery
right.
charge.
This is Christine. If I might add, you know, one of the things that we think about when we look at a situation like this where we're going into a community that has virtually no experience with natural gas unless they've moved into that community from someplace that had service. And so we think not only in terms of what makes sense from a rate design perspective, but also what makes sense in terms of making customer understanding and customer adoption the easiest for customers who are having to really absorb a lot of information when they think about transitioning from whatever their other heating source is to natural gas. And for all of us who live in the utility world and live in the rate world and can talk about these things, I think sometimes it's very easy for us to lose sight of how something that makes sense to all of us from a regulatory and a business perspective may not make sense to an individual who's switching. And so that's really why we look at things like billing and CCF and why we look at the lower monthly facility fee. And it's really to help adoption, because if we don't make it easy in as many ways as possible for customers to adopt natural gas, they'll never get the benefit of natural gas if it seems too overwhelming to them. One of the things that we added, in addition to the section Victor just talked about on that sheet, that shows how we, you know, the total annual cost is the same. It's $562. What varies is, as the facility fee is increased, the distribution rate is decreased, so it all comes out in the wash. But if you look at the final set of columns, that shows the example of what happens based on a smaller annual usage. So the average individual who's currently buying propane, yes, is used to doing things like paying their rental fee for their propane tank and whatnot, as we've been discussing. But they also understand that if it's a warmer season and they use less gas, or if they're lucky enough to be snowbirds and they spend part of their year in Arizona or Florida or wherever it is, and they use less gas, they understand that overall their charge is a little bit lower because they use less gas. And what happens when we have the higher facility fee or service fee, however you want to categorize it, it becomes less important. Even though they're using less gas, they still are ending up maybe paying more because they have that higher monthly facility fee. And so while we certainly, as Greg indicated, if you choose to require the $20 monthly facility fee, that's certainly something we can implement and we can educate customers on. But the reason that we really continue to propose the $850 is because, as you're explaining to customers in the conversion process how this works, that just feels a little more natural to them than looking at something that says, well, yep, even though I'm going to Arizona in the winter, in the coldest 2 months of the year or something like that, I still am having to pay this higher facility fee rate. Whereas if it's customer, if we're looking at it in the future, and then the commission said, okay, the system is up and running, the company is up and running, we think it's more appropriate to move to a higher facility fee and offset the distribution rate. At that point, when customers are more familiar with the concept of natural gas, there may be less shock to them than there would be at the time of transition. So that's another factor in that we take into account in our ultimate rate design.
I would say one thing, at least, you know, related to all of this, that's important to keep in mind, and Victor touched on it earlier, and that is rate cases are expensive in terms of the filing fee, and of course, ultimately, it's what is required to process the case, and with such a small number of customers, and I, you know, I don't want to misquote you, Victor, but you know, if you're talking several hundred customers, with the thought that, well, that base monthly facility fee can be adjusted through a rate case at a later date, that gets very expensive when customers ultimately have to pick up the tab for processing the case. And there's just not a very, I mean, we're talking the way things stand now, I would expect it would probably expand and grow, but does the 20 reduce the odds or improve the chances of not seeing a rate in a rate case sooner versus later? What is there a level of stability that comes with that, or
there's stability for the company, but I recognize their concerns. So there's stability from two things. There's stability in the higher the basic service charge, the more stable the company's financials are, but that's also requires a certain number of customers. So if, and that's why I'm not saying we need to move all the way up to the 46. If we move to 46, that provides financial stability, but not with enough customers to really give it that stability.
I don't like the 46.
So, I guess that's where my position comes in at the 20. It's 850 ensures the most adoption, but it doesn't give the stability over the long term, or doesn't give as much stability over
the long term. Which increases the odds that a rate case could come forth.
Sure.
I think that's a concern.
Commissioner, I think what we've laid out is what we believe, but and some of this is philosophy. You don't know until you really get out there and test the market. If it's $20, we will live with $20. We're not, this is not the critical issue for us. Staff had several changes and we thought they were all improvements. This one, we felt like we at least were obligated to tell you why we didn't propose. And I was concerned about going all the way to straight fixed variable. We would have very low customer turnout. If it's $20 and it's a firm rate that's standardized for all firm customers on the distribution charge, we will make that work, and we can explain that to customers. And I don't believe that is going to be the end of the project or undermine the financials in any serious way.
Yeah, with some of the numbers, and these are just rough, but as an example, let's say it required $50,000 to process the case. Maybe it's high, maybe it's not, but does American Crystal, if the customer base is 200 residential and one large commercial, do they get $40,000? And even if the residential customers landed at the remaining $10,000, the quick math on that, isn't that $500 a month or per customer to process? And that's an extreme, I realize, but just to illustrate that it has a profound impact on revenue requirement.
We do everything we can as a company, including accepting reduced returns. We've not earned the allowed return in Minnesota, for example, to avoid a rate case. It's very expensive with our customer base. But I think we can set this up with what the commission feels is appropriate, and we will work with it in either case. We're not, this is not the end of the thing for us. It's just that it, from our perspective, the lower customer charge is easier for customers to understand. It's less predictable revenue stream. You have issues with standby service in the winter when it's cold. People's bills are higher, so I get all of those things. We have a budget plan to help people work through that, but we will go with whatever the commission decides is appropriate here, and we'll make it work.
Are there confusion from customers over having both the distribution charge and the gas charge? Has that been confusing to them?
We've never had that. We explain to customers what components they are paying, and actually staff had some changes that will even simplify it more. So they understand this is what the company pays for gas, this is what you pay for having the distribution facilities, and this is your standard monthly charge, and that's pretty well received.
Okay, so they understand that the distribution charge is paying for the pipes, basically, or whatever. Got it.
Greg and Christine, this is Randy. I have to step out for another commitment, but Commissioner Karasius will close things out here, along with Commissioner Fedorchak. So.
I don't have any more questions on that issue. I don't know. Maybe Victor has more things to talk about.
that's pretty much all I have for the time being, commissioners. As I said, I'm still doing my review. Generally speaking, I'm happy with what the company has provided. They've been very, like I said, very nice to work with. Extremely responsive. I will note they have set records for how quickly they've turned around data requests. I think we have, 4 hours?
Wow.
To turn around. The majority of that handout, we sent those questions at about 10 a.m. and they were ready. They had responses by a 2 p.m. meeting we had that day. So
you've become the poster child amongst all
gas utilities.
But anyway.
We don't have many people to argue with internally.
There are benefits to that, right?
Absolutely. So my review continues. I'm sure I'll have more questions for the company as we go through this, but I will certainly be expecting to submit a memo to the commission with my recommendations.
And are you guys in on, what's your timeline?
The biggest driver is American Crystal Sugar is working with us. They wanted to know if we had our approvals by November 1st, which we obviously didn't meet. And they're trying to work through that on that, their end with their suppliers and vendors. But they need to know we have all regulatory approvals as soon as possible. And
yeah.
They haven't given me a hard deadline. I can't go any farther.
All right.
We just said keep working at it. We're going to try to work with you.
All right. Well, I think it's pretty important that we get this thing settled quick so that they don't get into a bind and Crystal Sugar can't, disappears. Not that that's going to happen, but you never know.
Okay. Does anyone else have any other questions that they want to ask at this time?
No, Commissioner, but I do believe there are a couple of things that just need to be cleaned up.
Okay.
And I don't know if you want me to address them now or okay. Just to point something out real quick is this is a unique situation where Vic and I are not advocacy staff, which is unique. We almost always are.
Yeah.
And that's partially because I think up to this point there haven't been a lot of disagreements on the cost and the expenses and the rate of return. But, of course, we're still looking through them. And most of the disagreements up to this point are more of a matter of philosophical disagreement. And, of course, we were finding our philosophical disagreements largely due to the fact that we're looking at our comparable utilities that we have in the state, which there are no comparable utility systems in our state. But that being said, we'll be filing an additional memorandum, and I think we would also – it would also be right to have the company – to allow the company an opportunity to rebut that in both of these filing should be allowed to be placed in the record as late filed exhibits, so there's no disagreement with that from the company or the commissioners.
Sure. Makes sense.
No,
okay. All right, so, and I think there's one other housekeeping issue that I had, and it had to do with the, we received some models in Excel form, and I spoke to Ms. Anderson, and she has provided those to us in PDF form, and those are all trade secret, however I didn't discuss those earlier, and I didn't provide them at this hearing today, but I also would like to have those in the record, which will be added to the folder. There's no objections to that.
There's no objections to that.
Okay. And I think
we have no objection to including those as trade secret documents.
Okay.
Jack, what kind of time frame do you think you guys can get your memo completed? And then, obviously if the company wants to rebut or comment on it, they'd have that too, but what kind of time frame are you guys looking at?
I'm going to ask Vic since we have the holidays coming up.
I would say a couple weeks, 2 weeks.
Okay. Does that work?
Yes, Commissioner.
I'm just going to go out on a limb and say we might need more than 4 hours to respond, but we'll obviously turn our response around as quickly as we can as well.
Well, I'm afraid that train has left the station now that you've done it once. No.
Ms. Anderson, would 7 days after our filing be adequate to the company to provide some response?
Yes, that should be fine.
Okay.
If for some reason there would be something that would require us to need a little bit more time, we certainly would communicate with you and request an appropriate extension. But obviously we appreciate the expeditious treatment of this, and we'll do everything we can to continue moving things forward as quickly as possible.
All right. Well, if there's nothing else, are there any objections to the evidence produced, including data requests, documents regarding rate design and all other oral or written evidence becoming a part of the official record?
No objection, subject to trade secret protection as previously discussed.
Okay, duly noted. And
which would just be the cost models.
All right. Good. The evidence then will become a part of the record upon which a decision will be made. Are there any other matters for the record?
Just one more. Some of these issues, including rate issues and rate design issues, may involve some information that came in with the CPCN hearing. I was just thinking about that. It was PU 18224, and I would just like to request that the commission take administrative notice of that case as well, and the information that was provided in there, in case some is pulled over from there, and see if there are any objections to that.
No objection. That would be appropriate.
Okay. Then this informal hearing is closed. Thank you, everyone.
Thank you.